it's all over, baby. Yeah.
What's up, dude?
What's up?
Hey, Callan, what's going on?
How's it going, guys?
Good. Pretty good, man. How are you tonight?
I'm doing good, thanks.
Where are you coming from again? You said Oregon?
Yeah, I'm in Oregon.
Nice. What part?
Southern Oregon. Medford, Oregon is where I live.
Medford.
Yeah, right on.
I remember
right
Medford. That's,
you were telling me that at the Under Oath show. When was that? It was during COVID. It was the end of COVID Under Oath show when stuff was going again. What was that?
Yeah, I was in Seattle. It was like pretty close to after. I mean, I think they were like one of the first tours back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty crazy. Like everyone still had to wear masks and stuff inside.
Yeah, that was that, and it was at the Showbox at Soto. But did you just come up for that show for that show, or what else were you doing?
Yeah, because Spencer was on our track Crosses that came out.
So yeah,
kind of went to meet up with him and kind of discuss the track a little bit and shoot some ideas back and forth, and then just so happened to get to catch the show. So it was cool.
Yeah, that was cool. That was one of the first shows I saw back after the pandemic, and it was like, it was just one of those things where you're like, oh, like you could, it was one of those emotional times where you could feel like what that feels like to feel music in the room again kind of thing.
Yeah.
I was having a powerful experience that night, and then you were standing right beside me.
Yeah. It was fun. I remember it was like the first show back, and there's that little pizza bar across the street. And I think I had like too many tequila shots. I was pretty lit by that point. Cause I think it was like my first outing in like a long time. And yeah. I was like pretty anxious actually to like go and like be in a room full of people, you know?
Yeah.
You remember how scary that was? I mean,
it was so scary. Was it
everybody?
Not scary?
It was like, are you supposed to do that? It just took so long for everybody to feel even close to comfortable.
Yeah, that's right. That's how it felt. But it was like, it was intense being around all the people. And it was kind of, it's like almost scary. Like whatever it was, it was like just the intensity of a bunch of people in one place was extra strong, I thought. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But it was awesome to see you. Yeah, I had a lot of fun at that show. And it was cool to link up with Spencer and get that track done too. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you know, speaking of like COVID and all that stuff, it's so crazy because it feels so long ago to me now, but it really, I mean, it still exists. It's still here. It's still part of our lives to a degree, but that just feels so long ago. But I was just curious with you guys, like, how did you kind of process that whole period of time with your band? Because I mean, it virtually shut down, you know, the touring industry. Right? I mean, so a lot of bands, I mean, there was people coped in different ways. Like what exactly did you guys kind of do during that period of time?
Yeah. I mean, it was the worst of times just because of like the situation, but it was the best of times for our band, especially for me, because our band was like touring nonstop, touring into the ground, taking really shitty tours and just like constantly going and going and going. And like, I personally just mentally and just like emotionally was just like in the worst shape. And like, I think that time at home to like actually be home and be like a human being at home was like the best thing to ever happen to me, because it put a lot of things in perspective. Number one, it showed me, oh, I can survive without having to tour nonstop. And number two, it showed me just like how important like family and just all that other shit like comes second, you know? So it was really good for me. And coming back to doing music now, it's like, it doesn't seem like a necessity. It seems like a luxury, and it seems like something that's like fun and exciting to do again. Like when you first start as a band, it's like, I guess just having the option to just know, like, I just spent 2 years at home and I don't necessarily need to go out and still do this, but I want to, like that. Yeah. That's the difference between having to and wanting to. So
yeah that makes sense.
Did y'all get shut down on a tour or anything? Like y'all
Yep. We were like at the beginning of our album cycle, and it was actually the album that like really brought us back, because we put out like a major label release that was a pretty bad record for us. So like this record came out and a lot of people were coming back to shows, and we were starting to have like great turnouts and things were going really well. And then everything shut down. So.
Oh man, that's crazy. Yeah. Because I mean, you know, for us, we were kind of already in that pace. You know, we were kind of already like, we've come to the point in our career where we tour only like a week at a time and things like that. Sometimes more, rarely. But it, for us, it kind of felt like just almost a continuation of what we were trying to do. But I remember, did you guys, now I don't know for sure some of the details about what you guys did during this time as far as digitally. Did you guys do some live album stuff too? Because we did a few of those. I know a bunch of bands did.
The live stream thing?
Yeah, yeah.
I think I did like something on my own with some friends of mine, like an acoustic thing, but our band never did like a live stream. I think logistically it just, the problem with our band is that we're from all over the place. So we have to like travel somewhere centrally to like rehearse or play or practice. And our drummer's actually from Australia. So it's like even tougher to get him to the States to do stuff. So I think like after mapping everything out logistically, it just didn't make sense. So instead we went in probably after a year at home and just started making a new record and recording that.
Okay. Yeah, you're like us then, because we're spread out. We got a few guys out your way in Seattle, and me and Toby are out here in the Midwest. So it's difficult. I mean, you'd like to do more stuff together, but like you said, we literally fly in for a tour like the day before, and then we practice that day, and then we play the next day. That's typically
how dang, you guys practice a day before and then just go right in?
Pretty close. Yeah,
I mean,
we don't have the production maybe that you guys have and all that. That takes more.
I think into that's probably smart. I mean, I think that so many days are wasted on rehearsals. Like, I swear, like whenever the band's like, hey, we're gonna rehearse for like 5 days, it takes like 2 days to set everything up, and then once everything's set up, we'll practice for like an hour, and then I'll be like, all right, it's like 7, dude. I'm ready to go get some food. I'm like,
You're right. There's a lot of wasted time when you have a luxury of multiple days to accomplish something that's relatively easy to accomplish. Yeah. You spread it out.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? When you have 5 days, you use them all. If you had less days, you would have probably, like you said, done more practice because you would have had less days. You'd have just moved.
Just get it done.
You'd be shocked at how much you can get done in a hotel room with the drumsticks on the bed and the unplugged electric guitars. Be shocked at how much you can 100. Rehearse in that scenario when you're about to have to go do something that you don't feel prepared for.
And to be fair, I mean, like the first show is technically your actual rehearsal and warm up because all the plans that you make in a rehearsal space, like you don't know if it's going to work or make sense until you get in front of a crowd.
So, exactly.
I was going to say, for instance, like whenever we go and play our first show, I'm always like, I did not give myself enough time to speak or breathe or drink water or anything.
You guys do everything on a pretty big level, though, for the amount of, to do all that rehearsal and kind of stuff like that. But, I mean, you know, you guys, size of your outfit and, like, to mobilize what you do at the level you do, is there's a lot there.
I don't know, man. Like, we we don't really have that much stuff. Like, I mean, back in the day, I guess, like, we used to have, like, set carts and, like, LED walls and stuff. But, dude, we've been running it with just a few lights and stuff. Like, I mean, our crew has been real bare bones for like the last few years. Like I said, we made a record that didn't really like hold up. And so we've been like building for a while. And also during that time, I think we all just kind of decided in my band, I'm like, why would we waste so much money on all that stuff? It's like, it seems ridiculous.
Yeah. Like, so you used to have more of that stuff and you don't, you mentioned that a couple of times about the record not doing as well. Do you mind getting into that? Almost every band that survives a long time has that, some story around a record you do.
Oh, I mean, we had stars in our eyes. We got signed to a major label and we, you know, were told by multiple people. Well, first of all, like it was one of those records where the producer like kind of pulled me away from the band and we were doing like writing away from the band, which was already like putting the band in an awkward spot. You know, I feel like there was some resentment from the guys and there was resentment for me too. Cause I'm like, I'm out writing all these songs and you guys are at home playing PlayStation, not because it's like their fault, but just because they had nothing else to do. So like from the get go, it was like one of those things where like, I wish I could look back and just be like, why didn't we just pull ourselves out of the situation instead of following it through? We should have trusted our guts, you know?
And how'd you get there though? Like what was before that, before you got to, like, what was the headspace before the major label thing? And was there a mindset change like that led up to that?
Well, I think that it wasn't so much the label's fault really, except for the fact that, you know, you hear like all the stories that actually happened to us is that as soon as we got signed to the label, like everybody that signed us got fired or moved on to a different one. So we were stuck with a whole new team of people that didn't care, you know, weren't right. a part of the process. So that, and then also, I just think that we strayed away from like what our band was. And I think that I also chalk that up to just touring all the time still too. Like we never had a time to like breathe or take a break or like question like what we wanted to like really do. We just kind of went through the motions and listened to too many different people. And I think that instead of trusting our instincts, you know, we kind of rolled with it and put out a record that it's not a bad record. It's just not us, you know? And I think that ever since then, we've become a band that is very, very instinctive on like, we know when things don't feel right now. We know when things are like not going the way they're supposed to, and we're not going to sacrifice that anymore. So
that's cool. Yeah. Cause, you know, when you are touring that much, like, I mean, we haven't toured really full time, I guess, in quite a while, probably been almost at what, like 7 or 8 years or something. Mm-hmm. But I mean, when you're doing 200 plus 250 shows a year, it's like you literally have time for nothing else.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's a week in between tours or 2 weeks in between tours to write, to try and be creative, to spend time with your family. You're trying to cram in all this stuff. And I'm not saying it's bad or even hard necessarily, but it's just so different. And, and we've talked about this a lot before too. And I don't know if you experienced this, but there's this weird duality of tour and home life. And so like, it takes a day or two to kind of recalibrate to your new, almost like the new version of you in a sense, like you become a different person. You have a different role, a different status.
Yeah.
And so this whole, and you go back. No, seriously. I mean,
it is.
Not as important as you were maybe on stage to your kids or to, you know, in a different way. And so, I mean, is that something like you were saying with tour? Is that kind of how you felt, just so burnt out on it all? Like going back
We were beyond burnout. I mean, we had come off probably one of our more successful records and just did like the Warped Tour circuit, like probably 2 years in a row. Like Kevin just kept asking us to come back. We kept saying yes, because, you know, we like to do it. But I think that it was just like, it was just in hindsight, you know, we didn't have enough time to like really just gather anything. And we rolled right into a record and we got signed to a major label. And it was just like, it was like one thing after another. And, I'm thankful for it, because without that record and that time to like really go like, do we want to keep doing this? Who are we? Like, what kind of record do we really want to make? What kind of band do we want to be? We wouldn't be where we are now. So like, and also like I was saying before too, with just spending ridiculous amounts of money that you didn't need on stupid shit, like two buses and set carts and stuff like that. It's like, it's ridiculous, you know, like.
How does it get that way? Is that something you didn't realize or wish you would have done different, like put more money in your pocket, or, you know, how does those decisions get made in a way where you look back on it and think it's ridiculous?
I think it's ridiculous just because for me personally, just like as someone that I always like to try to put myself in the perspective of like a fan, right? And so I've done so many tours, like with so many different bands that shoot confetti on people and do the CO2 blasts and stuff like that. And like, I'm not knocking any of it. I think that it adds something to like your band, but when every band starts to kind of do the same thing and follow the same routine, when you get to a certain level, and now all of a sudden this band's shooting confetti on people and doing this and that, it's like, I think it should be more about the music and the show. And I think that's what kids really want to see. And I think that you can connect with people with, you know, just based on that. Like, I haven't been to a Foo Fighters concert, but I'm pretty sure if Foo Fighters went and played a show and all they had was just like a little bit of lighting and the songs, they probably still do fine. They don't need all that shit, you know, because they just have the songs and they've got the energy. So,
but every band kind of goes through that though, right? In a sense, like we never got as big as you guys or something like that, but we had our level of success over the years. Mm-hmm. But every band kind of you raise your level of production and how you want to live or be you know, presented to your fans. Like, you know, we did tour buses for a long time, and we had more production and more crew.
Yeah,
and then you have full management and all this stuff for us. And it's like, man, we are giving away so much money and all this that for some of the things that, like you said, don't really matter that much.
Yeah, the connecting, is it really connecting if you've got like these things? Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I think that, I guess, I don't know why I keep coming back to the confetti because I just feel like that's what a lot of
things. Yeah, this extreme. Yeah.
I think it's like,
you know, there's no pyrotechnics anymore. It's just because there's confetti though. Yeah,
it's a portable thing, right?
If it was fire, it'd be maybe worth, you know, or guar with blood. That's probably got its place, but we can't do fire.
Okay, so
you know.
Even confetti, right? Like even shooting confetti, there's like a cleanup fee because a lot of venues don't want to like, they don't want to sweep that shit up like after you're done squirting, right. Like shooting it on people. So yeah, I mean, I guess it does add to the end of a set to shoot some confetti on people. People are like, oh my gosh, it's like, what a great ending. But also I just... I don't know. I feel like our band is more into connecting via our music and finding ways to do that, whether it be like a different way we write the end of our set or whatever. And I always am fighting the band on production stuff because I just am like, dude, why would we waste our money on that? Especially now when it's so hard to tour and to make money touring anyways. If we're gonna go do it, like let's put our money where our mouth is and let's put on a great show and let's come home so we can make a living and continue to play shows.
Yeah. Well, there's something that really, I want to try to identify, but it's like, you said that word connection and the way you're saying this, there's that video you put on your Instagram at some point or whatever. And it's like you doing acoustic and singing with the crowd. Like it's just, and like that is the thing that's the connection that's like very much happening as opposed to confetti. And that feeling of where it gets all everything stripped away, it's just the singing where they're interactive with you and the things happening. You can feel on that clip, it's like that's happening in the room and you're just barely there with the least stuff and the most thing is happening. And that's really clear. And it was, and it used to say on your, one of your social medias said worship leader. Like, and to me that just like, when I saw that clip, I was like, this is like worship music or something. Like there's a tie there to something that you understand about like that collective, like thing that a group can do. That's the thing that you seem to understand that concept. I'm curious. I don't know much about your background or what moves you got into, but us coming from the Christian point of view and stuff like that, like there's something to that just group participation thing that is more than confetti can ever be.
Yeah, but could you imagine that part with confetti? No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. I think honestly, it's just a lot of trial and error. But I mean, I grew up doing acoustic music. I did grow up going to church when I was younger and being a part of like youth group and doing things like that in the church. But I think a lot of the acoustic stuff and learning the crowd participation was just our band when we first started touring. You know, we were opening up for these other bands who were like already successful and stuff. And I just had the idea just based on doing acoustic performances locally when I was younger. Hey, let's take some songs outside and let's play some acoustic versions of them after the show next to the van. And let's like freestyle some stuff and just see how it goes. And I think that's when I realized like there's something to the acoustic thing, you know, and I think that our band has done a lot of work in reimagining songs acoustically. So they're not the same as they are full band or electric. And it's like, it's its own thing. So when we play those songs, it's like a different vibe because I guess I just imagine people listening to it in their car and singing along anyways. So it just so happens that they do it all together at a show, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's 100% right. Cause that's one of our favorite things to do is we do these shows called Songs and Stories, and they're just acoustic shows with up to 100 or so people. We talk, we take questions, tell stories. I mean, it literally is just so fun and relaxing, and everybody's just like, even if people are uptight when they get there, you know, like they're kind of like looking around, it's weird or quiet or something. By a couple songs in, they're just so relaxed and having fun, and everybody's just in it. So there is something really special about that connecting with the crowd. That's so. It's so much less distant than the big stage, the big production. You know what I mean? It feels more like you're a part of it or something. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for me, it's my favorite part of the night when we do acoustic stuff because I'm always struggling anyways, just with like hearing the mix in my in ears, and just because there's always so much electric stuff going on and we have so many lower tunings. So I'm always in my head. And I'm always like, am I singing on key? I've even got to the point where I put like MIDI piano in my in ear mix. Mm-hmm. I have my guitar tech dude just, and it's the most annoying MIDI piano. It sounds like I'm in a Western like bar and there's a saloon going on in the background. It's like, and I know I'm on now. So thankfully that's like been really helpful, but
that's a good idea.
But what I love about the acoustic thing is like, and I tell the guys this all the time, cause that's like the first thing that they like try to cut. And I go, dude, that's like the one time in the set where I feel like I actually get to show people that I can sing, you know, like I'm not screaming and singing. I'm just singing and they get to sing along with me. Like that's the most special part of the set, I think. So.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. And you guys did a, go ahead, Toby.
Well, this is what I've been thinking about because I can't get it off my mind.
Okay.
I'm gonna do a scene right now.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Let me set it up.
All right.
Okay. This is old Daryl, right? He's a custodian at event spaces. All right.
Okay.
Old Daryl's sitting there. The band. It's supposed to be done 11:59 p.m. It's 12:17 a.m.
Oh.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah. And the lead singer's talking, right?
Yep.
This is Daryl's reaction to what is about to happen, okay? So this is what happens. Confetti cannon. This is old Daryl's reaction. God damn.
Another confetti cannon.
It's like going into the restaurant ordering like 10 minutes before they close.
Yeah.
Right.
It's 11:12:17 and they had to do it the confetti. I didn't see the cannon all night. I was looking for it. I didn't see it. It was behind
I looked for the confetti cannon just to know, and I didn't see one. And that fucking bass player comes out of nowhere with the confetti cannon.
We're already 17 minutes over and he's got to have to pull out the confetti.
Y'all remember how mad you remember the venue, Kellen, Boardwalk in Orangeville, California? Did y'all ever play there?
I think so, yeah.
Well, there used to be a sound guy there named Claude, right?
Yeah.
Oh.
Remember him? Yeah, he was just outspoken sound guy.
Like Sacramento,
you know?
Right? Like kind of
Sacramento. Yeah. Exactly.
Dude, yeah. I couldn't remember that guy's name. I was trying to talk to my guitar player about that guy.
Yeah,
he was awesome. Yeah. He was a great sound guy, but he would tell you what he thought.
He's legendary. Yeah,
legendary. But one time we were playing there from First to Last, and I can't remember who all was on that tour, and we were the headliner at the time, and. Last song we played Walls, and it might have been the last show of the tour too or something like that, but it was a big deal, and From First to Last came out with Flower. Cooking Flower, and I mean it was just like
everywhere. All the grills of the Wedges.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
And Claude was not
happy. He lost.
Oh my gosh.
Did they have to pay for that?
I don't think anybody paid, it wasn't our choice.
I think we helped clean it up though. Like we
But they just had bags of flour and just showed up and just did. And there was a video of his punk rock vids, you know, video of that. But and it did really big at the time because it's just like you see it up there. It's like that green, like just grainy video, and all of a sudden it's just this flour explodes everywhere, and that's in Claude's room. What was y'all's experience with Claude? Why do you remember him?
Yeah. Okay. So I remember like. Probably the first couple of tours, Claude was very salty with us. You know, because he didn't know our band and he probably was like, this band's going to be here for a week and I'll never see him again. You know, like this is the one show. And then we just kept coming back. And I feel like he ended up being like really nice to us, I feel like, towards the end.
You won him over.
You earned his respect.
You earned Claude's respect. That's very nice.
Then I found out that you get your own sound guy and then you don't have to deal with those crotchety people.
Well, most of them are bad, but he was great. He really cared about what he did. And his trademark thing was he would do your sound check and then tell you, okay, take your treble knob. Turn it up a little bit. And he'd tell the drummer, he'd go, drummer, floor tom, could you give that about a quarter turn?
He was good, man. He was good.
That's a showboat.
Yeah.
A quarter turn. He heard.
It's just for the drum. For the drummer, he would say. He told you how to tweak your gear because he cared that much about it. But he.
I thought you were gonna say to the drummer, like, "Hey, do you have one of those plastic walls you could put up in front of the drum?"
So you guys, correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys released a new album last year, right, Kellen?
I think so. Sounds about right.
Hard to keep track.
Yeah.
I was looking earlier. It's called Complete Collapse, and you guys collabed with Spencer, you said, and so you did some stuff like that. Did you guys do some touring on that last year and stuff?
Yeah. So we've done a couple U.S. runs. We're about to go to Europe and the U.K. Here coming up in February, and we just got back from Australia. So those are the places we've gone so far.
Now, have you guys, maybe you never experienced any lull or any drop or anything, but some of us are kind of feeling this emo resurgence a little stronger. Are you kind of experiencing that a little bit in different ways at shows and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, in certain ways, for sure. I definitely, I feel like the song we play last, If You Can't Hang, definitely has especially it just depends on where you play it. But I mean, when we did like that When We Were Young festival, I feel like that song went off a lot harder than it usually does. And I feel like probably since we've been back, some of those songs have been going off a lot harder than they probably did before we left. So I think like a huge part of that is probably the absence of playing shows for a few years.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something to that. And I know it's scary for a lot of bands, because I feel like a lot of bands feel today that like if you are away, then you're less like you're gonna like fall off or something, but sometimes there's something to like having some time away, because people miss you. I mean, look at Pierce the Veil. Like, that band was away for like 5 years. They're like doing great right now because I feel like they've been gone so long. So there's definitely like a resurgence. But it's funny, I was thinking about this because I felt like this was going to be a question you guys asked. And when I was a kid listening to like this style of music, I don't remember ever calling it emo. Like the only thing that I knew about emo was that there was a game online called Emo Game. Do you guys remember that?
No.
Emo Game. I don't think I remember that.
It's a game where the Get Up Kids get kidnapped by
It already sounds great.
Yeah, the Get Up Kids get kidnapped. Somebody from Get Up Kids gets kidnapped by Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. And then you have to be someone from Hot Water Music, I think. And you have to it's like a fighting game. Like, you walk around and you beat up people and stuff to try to save this person from Steven Tyler. And that's the only reason I knew the word emo.
That's hilarious.
Well, what was your on ramp to get here? Like, to the time you did.
Yeah, like Warped Tour, bands like The Starting Line. I mean, you guys, like, I remember getting your record in Evangel Christian bookstores, actually, because my parents, the week's end, because my parents, they threw away like my Green Day records and all this stuff, because they were like, going to church, like, you can't listen to this.
Yep.
And they let me get your guys' record, which, I mean, I mean, it might have had like cleaner lyrics, but like it was almost more like they're probably like, this is harder and darker than what he was listening to before. But yeah, like you guys, The Used, The Starting Line, I mean, like the Warped Tour scene. But for whatever reason, I just looked at it more as like a scene that went along with like skateboarding and like kind of that world, like extreme sports, I guess, or something is kind of
that makes sense.
You know,
but the term emo wasn't part of it. For you,
it really wasn't.
What'd you call it? Was it aggressive or underground or hardcore?
Called it by the bands. I mean, like, we went to local shows and there'd be like a ska band that played and a hardcore band that played, and everything just kind of meshed together and it just was normal. Like, nothing was like real. It was like kind of a melting pot, like where I grew up. So I don't know.
The local shows still happen. That used to be exactly what we would do. We'd hop on with three other bands that we were friends with and play a show, and it was ska. What was the
instant winner out of ska Seattle. Band?
A punk band. Us, Acceptance. It was back then, and that's so cool. Does that still happen? Like, are bands still like local bands still a thing? Even it feels like that's just going away.
I've been playing guitar, and there's this dude at Guitar Center that like knows my band, and he invited me to his band's local show. So I'm gonna take my middle stepson and his buddies, because they're playing music all the time in their room. And I'm like, hey, you guys want to go to a local show and just see what it's like to go watch bands that are around here and play? And Yeah, I'm going to check it out. So
the hardcore scene seems to have, I mean, it's not exactly, you don't think of it as local anymore, but it's just like you can be any size. Like, you can be a good hardcore band probably that plays in the Northeast that isn't big, but you're good.
Yeah.
Like, and they go, they just do that all the time and stuff. So I think some of the, like, there's probably some scenes, but it's like one of the cool things about scenes is they, like you said, you get all the variety because all the people that can play are all going to go to one venue, even if they're different styles. And then the best stuff kind of bubbles up or whatever. But hardcore seems to like have a lot of local kind of shows because at least you can, it's interactive and you can dance to it. So that's like, swing used to be in the 40s or 50s, like the wherever the people can go, the social scene can go and dance and jump around is where there's going to be maybe a local scene, but not for everything.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I think like the internet probably made it harder for that to be a thing. Yeah. I think a lot of artists now feel like they can utilize social media to gain a bigger following.
The direct social media game trumps like getting into local venues probably.
Yeah. But I think like, that's still important though, to play like local venues and like figure out who you are. Cause I think a lot of these people or a lot of these younger bands that are like starting out, it's like, I think I went through a lot of emulating other bands that I liked. And it took a long time to like figure out who we were as like a band. And even like, you know, I was explaining later on in this or earlier on in this interview about, you know, you get signed to a major label and don't know what to do then. Cause I don't think we really had like that sense of self even then. So it like takes years to figure out like who you are. And I think honing those skills in like a room and playing like some shitty shows first is definitely helpful. So.
Oh, big time. I mean, I
was going to ask that too, though.
Yeah.
So you guys did the same as us then. You played the local scene and then like when you guys just got signed, what was y'all's deal?
What was the explosion? Yeah.
Kind of actually. So we all came from, so my drummer, my previous drummer, my bass player and guitar player were all like in different bands. And I was like in a local band here and I did like acoustic stuff like I was talking about. And my acoustic project had worked its way through MySpace, but I was playing local shows and stuff still, but we had our stuff on MySpace and it had worked its way over to Florida somehow. And this kid that was in this band called Broadway from Florida, who got kicked out of the band, was like, I'm going to start a new band. I'm going to get a better singer, whatever. And hit me up and flew me out to Florida to try out for this band. But he didn't really have like a drummer or bass player. So I brought my buddies from that band and we just kind of all like became a melting pot, put out two like demos. And then we did get signed pretty quick, but we still had to like tour like all the circuits and stuff and opening up for a lot of artists and no one really knew who we were for a long time. So.
And that's 2010, your first record comes out.
Yeah.
Right. And then, but I mean, it blows up pretty quick when it comes out.
I mean, kind of. I remember AP gave us a half star review.
Half star? Come on.
Half star, dude.
Yeah, it'd be better just to give no stars. I mean, half is a slap in the face.
Yeah, they were just, it was very like, I don't know what it was.
It was AP very, was, they were hard to
they were hardcore
win
back
over,
then, dude.
Especially back in the day.
Yeah. But, we got a half star. I remember my, like the guy from our label at Rise Records was just like, oh, they don't know what they're talking about, dude. And I was just like, I was so stoked because I was like a huge AP fan. Like I used to get the magazines and stuff all the time. And that's when I knew like when my favorite band was, you know, estimated time of arrival to put a record out, that's how you knew back then. So, I think it just kind of fueled our fire to keep going and keep, you know, getting better as musicians and stuff. So
what was the moment though, where you were like, no, okay, so we're for, because I mean, it's still in your first record cycle that you become very big. So that still is a very fast process.
I think it was like actually towards the end of that album cycle and the start of our second record is when we started to kind of get a lot of steam. And I definitely owe that to Warped Tour. I think that Warped Tour for us was like a huge jumping off, you know? And I still think to this day, like, I still think that we do a really, really good job at festivals. And it's just like where we feel the most comfortable. Like, I love just going in and playing like a 30-minute set with all of the best songs you have, just like everything you got, you know? Yeah. And yeah, I just remember that first Warped Tour show, like not expecting or not knowing who was going to be out there. We were behind the stage. I didn't want to look. And then we walked out and there was a lot more people than I could have imagined. So that's kind of where things started turning for us.
That's cool. Awesome. That's really great.
I remember ours. Well, I guess ours was that Tooth and Nail tour, right? Like we do it. Yeah. That very first one where Further Scenes Forever was supposed to headline. They drop off. Amber Lynn now has to headline. So it's Amber Lynn and Me Without You, who are new bands then. So when you think about that lineup, it's Amber Lynn, Me Without You, Us, Tashiwa. But I remember the very first, the very first show, and then we went over to St. Pete. I think it was in St. Pete. I was like, oh, this is real. Like, the first show, I was like, oh, that's pretty big, but maybe that's just, you know, people, we were in Florida, this one show or something. And then that second one, and I was like, oh, this is real. And then we sold $1,000 in merch and almost died. We thought we were the richest we could ever be. We'd never make more than that. I thought, we went straight to the top merch sales.
That was immediately when our record came out, too. So, we came in, we did that. And it's when we found out we did $1,000 in merch. It was because you do it two shows. You go, okay, that's a show. But then once you do it two places, you go, wait a minute. Are there this many people in every city in the world now that know us? Like it clicks. And when you go two consecutive out-of-town markets and they're singing your words, you say, wait a minute. If it's here and there, is it everywhere?
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
And there's that moment where you put two and two together, sell $1,000 of merch, and then we laugh for 5 minutes straight at that number.
Yeah, I remember
we're getting paid tonight.
I know we're getting paid $100 a night, and then we made 10. And I used to always do the merch. We would switch out some, but I was mainly the one that do it. And I remember just like that first night, I could not stop smiling the whole time. Because every time somebody comes up and gives you money, you're like, I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah.
And we used to do this really funny thing. We used to do this really funny thing, Kellen, when we first kind of started. Probably the first 8 months of us touring full time, we would split up the cash at the end of every week. And like, we never did anything. We didn't have a business manager or anything.
Yeah.
And we played this Mexican payday song. It was like a real happy trumpet song. And we would just pass out cash every week. That was how we did our business.
You might want to cut that just so the IRS doesn't hear. But
That was the days when you had to go. We'd have the cash. It was all cash. So you'd get cash unlimited. And then you just have to go take it somewhere. And you had to go to the post office and make it into money orders in 10,000s and take it. Because if you go to the bank, you get in trouble. Yeah. It's like, it comes fast. And it's, what are you going to do? And it's all cash. Yeah. So we would just distribute it, you know, directly there for a little period.
That's awesome.
So what do you think is possible future-wise? Like, you've now, and I don't know how old you are. How old are you?
I'm 36.
36. So you're at that point where you've given so much to this, but you have to look at from 36 to whatever. Like, how do you really see long-term? Do you think long-term at this point in your career?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, my kids are getting older and I definitely want to like be supportive in like what they want to do to follow their dreams and stuff. So I'm definitely, you know, I definitely don't see our band touring like we used to like ever again. You know, I think that our band's getting to the point where we enjoy making music and, you know, we enjoy playing shows and we're going to be, you know, very, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess selective on the stuff that, you know, we decide to do. But, I mean, for me personally, like, I'm learning guitar. I started learning like around the end of COVID and I've, you know, off and on picked it up, put it down, but I think I've gone pretty full in now. So I'm actually like learning pretty well and starting to pick it up, but just being like a songwriter and like utilizing like, an instrument and learning like a DAW, like Logic. I know how to use it to the extent of like, I can record vocals. I can't edit them though. I can't like put any reverb or any sort of like delay or anything on them. I know how to track them in. I know how to export them and I know how to send them off, but like just actually learning how to do it so I can, you know, either use it as a songwriter for my band or for working with other artists and things like that.
That's cool.
What are your kids and ages?
So I have a 19-year-old. I have a 16-year-old, and I have a going on 10 or 11.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
About the same as us. Do all the guys in the bands have kids? Did that make it harder? That definitely changed our touring structure for sure. Once kids got in the,
I'm the only one. Yeah, I've had.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've had two stepsons since the beginning of the band, and my wife and I have a daughter together, and so yeah, I've been the only one with kids the entire time. So it's definitely a challenge because, you know what I mean. Like some of the other guys, like I feel like they could just do the same stuff forever, and I get it because they don't really have as much responsibility. But yeah, definitely as my kids get older, I see myself wanting to be around a lot more because, you know, my daughter's, she's auditioning to be Mary Poppins here coming up pretty soon. I don't want to miss that. So it's like,
yeah,
stuff like
that. Yeah, that's interesting. We are different in that we've been I don't want to say weighted down or anything, but we've had 14 children and raised them. So
yeah,
we did something. We did something. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like now you go, we might play more shows next year than we did. You know, we might be able to play more shows coming up. And that's after having 14 children combined. So that feels pretty good to have. That's like an accomplishment. But it's like been across the whole band. So now it's like, okay, who still has the most what obligations to what is the phase we're in now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, dude, that's a massive accomplishment to all of you guys to have a family and to raise your kids up and still do what you love to do. And like, it's great for, I think, our kids to see that in our parents, you know? I think that sometimes my kids think that it all just kind of fell into my lap and it was like really, you know, but, but it is cool to like, to be able to bring your kids to a concert and let them see some stuff. Like, cause I know that when I was a kid, I didn't get to see like half the people I dreamed of seeing, you know? And I feel like my kids have gotten to see some really cool shows, just like being at festivals and stuff with me. And they have been around music and enjoy music and get to travel. And it's cool that you guys do the same stuff.
Yeah. That's awesome.
My kids never act like I'm cool though. They don't even, they don't even like it.
It was funny.
They're not going to.
I was telling these guys, so I live in Illinois now, and my daughter the other day said, "Dad, all my friends say you sound like so bizarre the way you talk because that you know I have a southern accent and I'm in Illinois." Yeah. And she goes, "I didn't hear it at all." She says, "I never heard that at all. I don't ever hear a weird accent from me." It's so funny that she said that, and I was thinking. Then it made me think. I'm on a trail here, and then it made me think when we first. When she was born in October, and then we went on tour with Under Oath and August Burns Red in December, and I had to go. And I was thinking back, I was like, man, that's crazy. Like, I had to go. It made money for my family. My wife had just had a baby, you know, and stuff. But I think back, man, it's crazy. There are things that, just like you're talking about, if she's trying out for Mary Poppins, and you don't want to miss that stuff because that doesn't come back. You don't want to let the fans down and stuff, but that stuff doesn't come back.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I definitely think it's harder now as the kids are older because like they're doing things like that when they're, I'm not going to say that it's not important to be around when they're babies and stuff and crawling around and doing things like that. But it's like, I feel like they don't have as much concept of time, but they do now. It's definitely harder when I'm leaving, especially my daughter wants to know like, how long are you leaving? Like how long is it going to be, you know? So we like to keep it short and sweet. So,
100%.
That's cool.
Well, dude, we appreciate it, man. Thank you for being here tonight. This is very fun. I don't. I've never even met you in person. I guess our paths as bands never crossed. I guess anywhere really. Maybe some festivals or something. I can't even remember if we ever played a festival with you guys.
Yeah, I know. Well, we should definitely get together and hang out. Maybe grab some food. You guys are in Illinois, you said. Well, some of you are, and then some are Seattle.
Yeah. I'm in Seattle. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, we're going to be out Portland way, I think, in April or so.
Are you?
We might hit you up and just see if you're around.
Yeah, I would love to come out to a show. I'm a big fan, and I would love to come out and watch you guys now. You know, like, I think I saw you during the Question era. That's when I saw you guys play on tour. And so, yeah, it would be awesome to see you guys now.
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, thanks for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It was awesome. Appreciate talking to you guys.
Yeah, man. Thanks, Kellen.
All right. See you, man.
With Kizik hands-free shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy-on, easy-off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
All right, we're going to pay some bills here. If I can find it.
Oh, yeah, we can find it. Let's see. Katie,
I got it.
It over.
I got it right here.
You got it?
Now, let me tell you something. You know what's on sale
now,
for
are
Valentine?
You the designated CTA guy?
Don't interrupt this.
Are you the designated CTA guy?
Does it require a designation, or is it just?
Well, I just feel like Toby just took ownership, which is, I appreciate it. I'm just curious.
Old Daryl, the confetti gun just went off. Yeah. Old Daryl.
Old Daryl.
God damn.
He flicks his.
Is it me or not me?
Yeah, go for it.
Do you know what's on sale for Valentine's Day?
I got a guess.
Candy?
Nope.
Dittos?
Nope. No dittos? Songs.
Song.
Custom
songs. The real sex supply songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
You think, that's the trick all along. You thought sex toys is for sex. No, songs.
You know what I'm going to do?
Songs are the aphrodisiac.
Yeah. You know what I'm going to
do? You use the toy.
Yeah, then maybe a dildo, maybe.
Here's what I'm going to do for Valentine's Day. Here's what I'm going to do for Megan.
Oh, Devin, get nasty. Devin, get filthy.
We're going to be. Oh, we're getting the vibe going, right, you know, just in the bedroom. I'm going to be just romanticizing it, just getting it going, you know. And then we're going to start making out, foreplay. And I'm gonna improv a custom song on the spot.
That's what I'm saying. She has unlimited custom songs. Megan does. Like, you drop custom songs on her. It's like a $500 value every night. And she gets it lavished upon her. Can you imagine?
Can you imagine
$500? Here we go, babe.
Well, can you imagine
what? And you just unleash
our wives or ex-wife would have done if you started singing her a song that you were making up.
Babe,
like,
I'm gonna hook
seriously.
You up. This is a $500 value. Yeah. What I'm about to do to you right now. Here we go. And you just take it away, unlimited.
Oh gosh.
Oh man. They're on sale for Valentine's Day. Limited quantity because Valentine's Day is quickly approaching. So, order right now. Go to emerymusic.com. And Emeryland members get 20% off. So, think about this. Join Emeryland. If you're going to buy the song, go ahead and join Emeryland. You get a discount. You get two for like, it's probably one. Not really, but in the vicinity of like 50 to 60. I don't know. Emerymusic.com. We're also headed out on tour. For Songs and Stories.
The big tour now.
February 3rd, Nashville. Big. February 4th, Atlanta. February 5th. And we're also looking for venues in Atlanta. Small venue, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So if anybody hit us up.
I mean, if anybody has a recommendation for any of these cities, it's helpful.
Very helpful. February 5th, Birmingham, Alabama. That's a matinee show. Those are so fun. March 2nd, Columbus, Ohio. March 3rd, Pittsburgh, PA. March 4th, Philadelphia, PA. March 5th, New York City, New York. March 29th, Portland, Oregon. March 30th, Vancouver, BC. We got a lot of dates. Vancouver, BC. We back, Canada. We back up that piece. Tickets are on sale at emerymusic.com. And no fucking ticket fees. When you get a ticket on this, there's none. It's, that money goes to supporting the band that you are there to see. And we appreciate that.
Zero ticket fees.
Yeah.
Zero.
Now, Matt was talking about dildos earlier. Vibrating cock rings. Vibrators, oils, massage oils.
I'll be honest. I got a go-to.
You got a go-to.
I got a go-to vibratronic apparatus.
Yeah.
It's a vibrating cock ring and it's nice. It adds to the experience.
Yeah.
It enhances not only her pleasure, but also a little bit of mine.
Yeah, Devin.
And I enjoy it.
Mary so Supply.
I just want to say thanks to Mary Supply.
MarySupply.com.
It needs a jingle bad.
Yeah, it does. Mary Supply. Get it right. All right, now y'all come up with one. Come on.
Okay.
All right.
Here we go.
When the vibe is just right, and you know that it's about to go down.
I see the, I feel the pulse.
Yeah. Marriage Supply.
Marriage Supply.
Marriage Supply.
Marriage Supply. Nice.
That's my. That's my
all right. Matt.
Talking about Marriage Supply, you got to get it right. You got to get your shit and you got to get it tight. You got to get it right on Marriage Supply. You're going to get your shit and you got to get it right.
Matt with the auto parts route. Right. I like that.
Yeah, it's like the auto parts
store route.
I couldn't compete with Devin on like that kind of thing. So
yeah.
Right. Another route.
Well, that was a smart move.
Man, y'all killed it. That was very good. Use code all over at Marriage Supply to get 10% off of all the world's best sex toys. Emeryland members, we are changing up the feed for part due, so check your email or Discord for the new info. We just received an update from Unoriginal Vinyl, and we will be receiving Rub Some Dirt on It early in February. Thank God. Join Emeryland. When you join Emeryland, we just launched a new content library for Emeryland. It's easier than ever to find all the exclusive music podcasts. You get a part due. Not only you get this podcast, but only Emerylanders get a whole nother hour. It's great exclusive music, the podcast, videos. You also get 20% off everything at, for on the Emery site and Marriage Supply.
That would include Songs and Stories tickets, wouldn't it?
Might.
Yes. Nobody thinks about it.
Oh, that's
it's
true.
Like that simple. It's like you just use the code.
Wow, that's great.
And then you're going to get 20% off the tickets. That there's no ticket fees on. Anyway,
damn.
We do a lot of shit, basically. And basically, I'm just going to say at this point, there's a
get
kind
your
of an
shit,
expectation.
Marriage Supply.
It's just to join Emeryland is just kind of an expectation. If you're still listening to this podcast now, after all of this, when you know the end of the podcast is nothing but an ad, and you're still listening, there's just an expectation. You've probably listened, I don't know, dozens of times, hundreds of times. There's
to be
an
honest,
expectation.
To be honest, you should be ashamed of this.
Yeah. All right. So just go to emerymusic.com to join. All right. And lastly, we got some names. You get your name read. Mm-hmm. You get it read on this podcast.
That's why they haven't, you know, skipped yet, because this is the part they really like. They listen to all the ads just to get to this part.
Did y'all listen to my the voice thing that I sent y'all the other day? I was in a good headspace, we'll say, and I couldn't get out of my head that you want something sweet, but you don't know what. This is you want something sweet, but you don't know what.
Okay.
I want something sweet, but wet.
Well, you got to give people a little bit of insight to our sweat joke.
Yeah.
Right?
What we just started saying it on tour, we started calling something, if we want something sweet, we just were making a joke. We call it sweat.
And then we also have soot.
Salt is soot.
Sweat.
Then so sometimes also, you want something sweat, or sometimes you want something sweat.
Sweat. And then what was there's another one we added.
What was the other one?
There was a sour, and how did we say it?
Oh, yeah, I don't remember how you say sour. Depends on the crazy
sir?
You're having.
No, what sir?
Sewer?
Sewer?
Sewer? Some sewer?
So when you go to a gas station, you got to get, if you're going to get something sweat, you got to get a little sweat to even it out.
Yeah, you can't just get a sweat without the sweat. But
you have a little of both.
But what?
But wet.
But wet.
The question is so good.
But wet.
Once you identify what you need, yeah. the saw or the sweat.
Yeah.
Then, but what?
But what?
It's wide open.
But what?
Now you know what you need.
Oh, God.
But what?
How, God, I wish I saw one of y'all saying that out loud at a gas station in front of people. I want something sweat. I mean, I want something sweat.
I'm sweet.
But what? If you said that out loud at the gas station.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, dang. All right. Let's read the names. So this week, Devin, you got the names pulled up?
You don't have their favorite? Sweat?
Yeah.
I got the names.
Okay.
What did they say?
They sent in their favorite term for farting.
Favorite farting term.
Yes. What they call it. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
All right. Jenna Hoopengardner.
Steven Fardick.
Now, how would you say that? I Steven Fardicked?
Yeah.
Just
Steven Fardick.
Who the fuck Steven Fardicked? Who the fuck did that?
Steven Fardick. That's catchy. I hope that catches on.
That's good. That's a good.
They call him Steven Fardick out there, right?
They have to. No, he's got people.
Yeah.
There's people that
shut that down real quick.
You're probably right.
Yeah. Okay.
Chris Elwood.
A butt barf.
Nice. I like that one.
Butt barf. Butt barf. That's good. That's a... Isn't that more of a shat?
Yeah, but...
That's probably a shat.
But I was thinking... According
butt burp wouldn't be as good.
Well, yes.
Butt belch?
Yes, butt belch, you're right. But I was thinking a butt barf is a fart, but you feel a little like liquid come out or something. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like a barf kind of, but it's not a full poop.
No.
It's just a little, you're in trouble. And you know where you need to get to.
It's cool. Yeah. But you could just say butt barf is diarrhea, and that's still awesome. Like butt barf is worth being something. And I think the thing that it is diarrhea, not a fart. But
we got to make a butt barf t-shirt.
I still like
please.
Butt barf.
Copyright that right now.
So I just think it's talking about diarrhea.
Imagine
though.
Somebody saying, "Oh man, my stomach's bothering me so bad. I've been butt barfing all day long."
Oh seriously, I don't know what's about to happen. Probably definitely.
I've been butt
barf.
Barfing nonstop.
I cannot stop butt barfing.
Number one or number two, butt barf.
Okay.
Probably.
Robert Nilsson.
Rim slide.
Yuck.
Rim slide.
That fart slides right across the rim of your butthole.
Rim slide. Okay.
Isn't it weird? Rim is a weird word. Because the rims on your car, that's cool.
Drums of the rim.
A drum rim.
Basketball.
But also
the basketball
butthole.
Rim.
But also
basketball
a butthole is called
and sky rim, whatever that is.
So wait, so every rim is good,
rim
but one
job, rim salad.
Yeah, but
job.
As soon as you, yeah, every rim is good except for one.
Rim,
and that one is the one that
sleep.
You think about more than any. Right?
It's basically just the top,
the rim.
The rim. I mean, there's nothing to work for it. Yeah. Like it can be a hole. It can be a hole with a rim.
The rim.
It's the
in
perfect
the earth.
Word.
Yeah, it's the perfect word. It's not ambiguous at all.
There's no other word.
Rim.
It's the fucking perfect word.
Yeah, rim is perfect. Yeah, there's not anything. There's a lot of words that I really feel not good about the way
it's
they're
the
used.
Thing that goes through.
No. Yeah.
I mean, what else am I going to call it?
Yeah, but it's just in or out of the rim. Everybody knows exactly what the rim is. The rim is clear. That is not a weird word at all. That is a perfect word.
Yeah.
Very clear. All right. Alyssa Evans.
Yeah. Air biscuit.
Air biscuit.
Air biscuit. Yeah.
I think that was the movie of one of that dog. It's like that dog movie. That's one of
Air Bud. Air Bud. No,
yeah. And Sea Biscuit combined.
Air biscuit. They're gonna make a movie about a flying horse. Yeah. They get dunk and stuff.
Air biscuit.
Oh my god.
That's Air
biscuit. This summer from Air
biscuit. Air biscuit. It'll just rip your heart out of your chest. Air biscuit. And have you seen that new Air biscuit? Oh my god,
that Air biscuit movie.
There's no chance I'm gonna say this last name correct.
Okay.
Okay. Michaelo Carpenco.
Good.
Yeah. Does that brave, feel close?
That was a brave try. I think that sounded pretty good.
Sorry if I didn't.
I'm having a fart attack.
Fart attack. Not bad.
And that's all of them. And they wrote those. So, butt barf should be. We're going to make that a t-shirt.
Mm-hmm. What make, else did? Yeah, there's a couple other t-shirt ideas. We just need to start making them.
I know.
Butt barf.
Imagine two cheeks and it's barfing a
you
rainbow.
You think they want a butt barf t-shirt? You think that's what they want to buy?
Just say,
and are who these the people an image? Are the people you want to sell it to? All the
it'll
people
sell out immediately.
Super upset about the podcast image cover of ours that they can't listen to it at work and they can't. They're embarrassed if on the subway somebody sees what they're listening to.
We get emails every week.
Is it these people,
people
that
begging,
you want to sell
dear God,
the butt barf
change
t-shirt to?
The logo.
Why does that make it so much better?
Because
I know,
in,
it makes
they're
me
out there in public, like at Starbucks in some way, and they're like they're sitting there with their like you know looking super put together, and somebody walks by them and they see the hairy,
no, hairy that's really them. That's really
phone,
all of us.
And they
it's
feel
the most real
horribly
thing.
Embarrassed when that happens. Like they, the thing that we are and do, they feel horrifically embarrassed about if anybody were to possibly see the thing that we put out there. They feel deeply embarrassed and humiliated if our imagery is known to anybody in public. That's how they feel.
I mean, that you can't, it feels immature, of course, but it's like you can't help but I like it so much more because
I know.
Of
that.
Yeah, how are we supposed to change
it's
it?
It's iconic now.
I mean,
I'm telling you.
It's like, you know, it's a little bit, maybe gives it a little underground.
The whole thing is so great,
can't
too.
Listen
because,
to it.
Yeah.
Then.
Of course, I made that. Yes, but it's not even done well. Like, it's not completely
well, remember,
centered.
Remember, we talked about what we were doing and all, stuff. And all that. We looked at a few, I was in your garage with you. We looked at a few different belly pictures.
That's right.
Yeah. Like, which one's the best belly? That was our decision-making process. Which one makes you the most uncomfortable? That was pretty much what it was.
And it works. It works. The picture works. That's so awesome. It bothers people. What other podcast picture bothers you? That's so funny. There's not another podcast picture that bothers anybody ever. You have 1,000 podcasts in your catalog, or whatever.
No,
not
bother.
One. Never. No one
this
is.
This one, you have to. You
know
have
I mean?
To come back.
It's not
to
like
it.
A rock record back in the day or whatever. They show a girl in a bikini or something. You know, this is podcast. It's all. I mean, there's not one except for ours.
It's a
hairy belly
problem.
Button and it's awful. It's just a man's belly button and it's horrific. People can't stand it. They're praying and begging. It's just a man's belly button. It's that bad.
It's that bad.
It's that horrific.
Yeah, it is. It's that bad.
People request it daily.
Daily. We get emails
for us
constantly.
To change it.
I can't stand
daily.
It. It's driving them fucking
and
insane.
And we always say, and we always say the same thing. Yeah, we'll change it at some point.
But how do you beat that?